Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Athletic Hockey Show.
Good afternoon, Sean. They let us do another show.
Cool. Nice. It's a streak now.
It's sure to last forever. Yeah. Welcome to the Athletic Hockey Show. This is the Two Sean's and a Frank edition, I think, is what we should be calling it. It just rolls off the tongue. I'm Sean Gentile. He's Sean McIndoe. We have Frankie Corrado as our, I don't want to say he's our guest because he's not our guest. He's just the third. No. He's the third guy.
He's the third wheel who shows up periodically.
We didn't ask him either. He's just gonna like.
The whole theme of this show is two dudes who think they know hockey talk about it, and then every second week, a guy who actually knows hockey shows up and politely, probably corrects all of our bad takes.
We had our little like pre-show meeting a week or two ago, where we just BS'd and got to know each other a little bit. And the first thing Frankie said was, do I have to change my name to Sean?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a good sign. And
he said, yes, absolutely. And I don't think the legal paperwork's done yet, which is disappointing.
I'm not familiar with that part of Canadian paperwork, but yeah, we'll see. So Frankie's going to be around in a few minutes. He's going to stick with us for most of the afternoon here. And he's going to be here every other week moving forward. That's kind of the plan. So if you like what he says, which you certainly will, because it's going to be good and funny and Frank is the best, then you can just ignore us next week and come back week after that.
We will eventually we'll introduce like a Sean filter where you'll be able to click a button. Awkward silence and then Frank coming on going, no, guys, incorrect. And then saying intelligent things. It's going to be good.
Just get someone else named Frank to come on. If only there were someone. I feel like it's been a low key, like sneaky kind of busy week. Like there's been some stuff that's happened. We're going to try not to talk about Morgan Riley and Ridley Greig for the next 45 minutes because we've all had enough of that. But that's been in the atmosphere. Sean, I think where I want to start here, the one big thing that I've learned in the last week.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
And it took me a while to get there because I feel like I've talked about it on whatever, on the show with Haley and Max. I feel like you and I talked about it. I think the Penguins are cooked. I think Pittsburgh is done. We saw Pierre LeBrun go on TSN last night and say, you know, that they're essentially open for business. They're not going to be trading Sidney Crosby or Evgeny Malkin or Chris Letang, but they're listening to offers and they're kind of ready to roll. You know, is there whatever it is, 9 or 10 points out of a wild card spot here, 18 days from the trade deadline. It took me a while to get there. I think I was making excuses for them for probably longer than I should have. But they're cooked, right? Like, are we ready to say that?
I think they are. And I like, I'm with you on it. Probably took me longer. I'll just say it took me longer to get there because it's the Pittsburgh Penguins than it would have with other, like, you know, if the Minnesota Wild had the exact same scenario playing out, I would have just been like, ah, they're out, or most other teams. But because it's Pittsburgh, because it's Sidney Crosby, because Kyle Dubas so clearly went all in on this year and went out and got Erik Karlsson, and I kept waiting. I kept giving them more rope. And at this point, the way this week has gone, and even the last few weeks, 3 wins in their last 10, just falling out of the race. And it was almost a situation, and we see this around the league this time of year a lot, where there are some teams where you go, you know, buyer, seller, not sure. And the for the GM, it's basically like, you know what? You guys tell me.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have got a couple weeks to tell me. And the Penguins have told Kyle Dubas, you know what? We're not very good. So feel free to do whatever you need to do. But I tell you, here's my question to you as Pittsburgh guy.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to play in Pittsburgh? Because even a couple of weeks ago, I remember writing that, like, with Jake Guentzel, I said I would move him.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bunch of Penguins fans make the not unreasonable point that, hey, even, you know, go ahead and trade Jake Guentzel. We all know the Penguins, the prospect pipeline is barren. They desperately need picks. They definitely desperately need some young players. They said, yeah, okay, go ahead and trade him. You're going to get a prospect and a first round pick, maybe. First round pick's going to be in the 20s. You're not going to see that guy for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The prospect is you're probably not going to see for a couple years. And meanwhile, you got Sidney Crosby playing at MVP level. So how does this help? You know, what future are we building towards? So how is this going to play? Like, is Dubas going to have carte blanche from the fan base to do what needs to be done? Or is there going to be pushback on this going like, we got to squeeze every last drop out of this veteran core that we've invested so much in?
It's really easy to say that they should go out there and move Riley Smith and Noel Achari and Ricard Raquel if somebody would take, like, guys like that. That's one thing, right? And I can guarantee you that the fan base is more than ready for that. They're ready for the Riley Smith era to be over. I can guarantee you that much. It's something else entirely when you're like, we're pulling the plug here, actually, for real. And moving Jake Guentzel, who's one of the five best wingers that's ever played for this franchise, who's been stapled to Sidney Crosby basically since he came in the league. He's a pending UFA, clearly. That's why this discussion is happening. Cutting ties with that dude now, seventh, even when we hurt, whatever, at now at the deadline, whenever it happens, that waves a different sort of white flag, I think, than a lot of people are ready for. And I think that's what a lot of folks, me included, honestly, as someone who has to talk about this team more than I'd like to. That to me feels like the red button. That's like the move that really signals something different. And I sincerely did, partially because the Metropolitan Division, like, it's mediocre. Like, it seemed like they had a bunch of games to play before the deadline. It felt like they were going to be able to at least get to a point where you could squint and see the playoffs off in the future. And if that's the way it is, if you have a prayer, and I've been on this train for years with them, if you have any hope of making the postseason, you lean into it, because every single one of these seasons is precious. You don't get Sidney, you get Sidney Crosby once in a lifetime. Like, you got to make it count. But I am fully now, because again, they're 8 points out of the wild card race and not playing particularly well with a zillion teams ahead of them. Like, the die has been cast. You got to do what you got to do. So if you feel like Jake Guentzel is going to be too expensive to sign long term, you trade him.
And you have to know that by now. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, what did you make of the Sidney Crosby comments this week, where he was basically asked
mm-hmm.
how he would feel about those sorts of moves? And he certainly didn't endorse them, but he also didn't draw a line in the sand and say, no, not on my watch. Don't tear this team up. I'm going to put him on my back, you know, whatever. Like, it sounded like he was sort of,
mm-hmm.
implicitly given permission to Kyle Dubas to do what needs to happen.
We know that there's like a threshold that we know, like, what his limit is with that. Cause he's not a guy who's, first off, he doesn't want to be perceived as a guy who puts his thumb on the scale when it comes to this stuff. Yeah. Part of it's about public perception, but part of it is also about he doesn't want to interfere. Like, that's sincere on his part. We've seen him do it in the past. We saw him do it 2 years ago with Malkin and Letang. That was his, like, lay the cards on the table and be like, listen, you are bringing these guys back. Like, you know, like elbowing Ron Hextall. I think you realize what I'm talking about here when I say you probably should sign these guys long term. Like, that was when he used his clout. We know what that looks like. And I don't think we're seeing that here. Yeah, and he did. He said that to Rossi, Rob Rossi, a few days ago, I believe exclusively, like, you know, I'm not putting my thumb on the scale here. Like, Kyle needs to do what he needs to do. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's, you know, that's basically what he said. Because I think he's a reasonable dude. And I think he can look at you know, at the standings, both in the wild card and in the division, and be like, we don't have the juice this year.
But and he's if playing it, so well.
It's a joke. It's a joke that dude he's going to be on heart ballots this season. People are going, he's going to be ninth in or whatever. Yeah. People are going to vote for him. On a team that
misses the playoffs.
On a team that misses the playoffs. Having a season that who was the last 36-year-old to do what he's done? It doesn't happen. And it can end quickly. And I say this every week, dude. I say this every week. Joe Sakic, a guy who was an MVP candidate late into his 30s until the second that he wasn't, and then it was done. Yep. He was cooked.
Steve Eisenman was another one. The game I always play, and people who have listened to me before have heard me do this, is I always, you know, go back to opening night. And if somebody told you, right, and if somebody came to you and said, you know, hey, opening night, hey, you know, what's going on in Pittsburgh, right? They got Erik Karlsson. Isn't this going to be crazy? And if somebody said, Sellers at the deadline, 5 points, 8 points out of the playoffs, you would say two things. You go, oh, okay. So probably the goaltending wasn't good. No, actually, goaltending's been pretty good. Goaltending's been surprisingly good. They go, oh, okay, so Sid must have finally hit the wall. No, Sid is having one of the greatest seasons of his career. You're like, everything factored in. You know, not the overall numbers aren't going to get there, but he's phenomenal. None of the rest of it worked.
Tristan Jarry's leading the league in shutouts, and Sid's having maybe the best 5-on-5 production of his career. Okay, they're how many? They're eight. Yeah. 8 points out.
So they're in first. Okay. No, they're behind the Flyers.
they're actually behind the Caps and the Red Wings.
Yeah,
they're
behind the Caps. So Ovechkin must be having a great season. No, actually, you know. It's why, you know, this league, this is why I do the prediction contest and all this other stuff every year. We always get to this point and there's people who are like, we all knew the Penguins weren't going to be good. No, you didn't. No, we don't know anything on opening night. And then we just fill in around it and we fake our way to pretending like any of this makes sense.
I mean, we talked about Sid. We got to talk about Ovechkin at least quickly. Was there like an Ovechkin question on the season preview? Like, was there any?
I didn't know. I didn't have anything stuff like that, but he's good again. Finally, after
he's
half a season when he wasn't. Well, he's scoring again. He's scoring because I say he's good again, and some people are going to go, no, he's not. And some Capitals fans are going to say he was good all year long. If you actually watch the games, you'd see that, you know, all this stuff. But yeah, he's been scoring again, which is good because that's the only thing we didn't want. All of us was Alexander Ovechkin crawling towards the goals record.
It felt like it was, I think I was on the verge of not jumping ship, but saying like, is this going to happen? Because he started, how many was it? 64 or however many was it, you know, very, very recently. And you're like, okay, you start doing the math and it's not favorable, but he's, you know, 16 points. He had a 6-game goal streak. He's showing a pulse. He needed to have an outburst like that for him to get back on track. And six goals in six games is nothing to sneeze at. And it's the but it's also the kind of thing that he needed to make up space because if he stayed in the tank for that much longer, then we'd be like, it's going to be two more seasons after this one, maybe for him to do it. And that's when stuff starts to get really, really squishy because this man is Christ, he's older than me, which is wild.
That's which is oof. That's all. Yeah, 6 goals in 6 games, or as Austin Matthews calls it, a good 48 hours. So,
I think Austin's going to come up with Frankie. I think we have some Austin questions teed up for.
That's the perfect that's the perfect segue.
It is the perfect segue. Coming up, F. Sean Corrado.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Frankie, there's still time to back out, man. You don't have to do this.
Actually, my first question to you guys is this going to be video recorded as well? Because I'm not having a good hair day. And if it was just audio, that would be great.
They've officially rescued everybody. We don't have to worry about video.
In our contract, no video. Because I'm glad you got the gray hoodie memo, though. Like this, Sean didn't go with the official uniform of.
I got a little something going here. Are you guys fans of the show Friends at all?
Yes. Come on.
You know when Phoebe Buffay, she has a little bit of a raspy throat and her singing voice is really good.
Before I start, I just want to say that I have a cold. So if I sneeze in the middle of a song, it's not on purpose. Snowy cat, snowy cat, what are they feeding you? This chick sounds good.
Like I have that right now. And I got some sensual tones, but a little bit of a scratchy throat at that expense.
We'll give it a work. You don't have any TV to do tonight or anything, so we'll just grind you to
travel
powder.
Travel day. I'm out in Sean Gentile's neck of the woods today, heading to Pittsburgh.
Dude, I wish we and I'm not there, which is bogus. I hate this. DGB brought it up. Like you're doing Habs games consistently. You are the guy at the moment, right? So you're in Pittsburgh for Habs Pens, which is on Thursday night.
You know what? Yeah. So Dave Poulin takes the job with the Sens. So I got this great opportunity now to start doing some color for Habs games. And it's been very cool to watch the journey of Slavkovsky, mm-hmm. Suzuki, and Caulfield. Like Caulfield, we'll start with him. Like his shooting percentage was down quite significantly early on. Like he was probably at 7.5%. His career shooting percentage was probably in the 12s. And I think last year he was 16th. He was really hot last year. He went on a stretch. I can't remember how many games in a row he had a goal. It might've been 5 or 6 games in a row. Like it was, he finally found it. His shooting average went up 2% in like a month. And he's doing more than just scoring goals. Like he's making plays. He's playing away from the puck. Nick Suzuki, for me, he falls into that doesn't get enough love around the league category. I think a lot of people still see him as, you know, the ceiling, a number two center on a really good team. Like this guy's doing a lot with a little bit in Montreal. And like he just, it's almost like he makes the game look easy. So you almost come to underappreciate exactly what he does. He's been really impressive. But the biggest story and maybe the most polarizing thing between Habs fans and the rest of the league is the progression of Juraj Slavkovsky. Mm-hmm. And it seems to make the rounds a lot. And mm-hmm. he's a first overall pick. And I think a lot of people expect a lot more out of him production-wise. And here he is. He's got a 10-game point streak now, I believe, going into tonight's game against the Sabres. And like night and day difference between last year and this year, where last year, like anything that could have gone wrong for the guy, it felt like it did. Where constantly getting hit, constantly, you know, getting knocked off the puck, felt like he was thinking his way through the game. And a lot of the narrative was, well, the NHL, it moves too fast for him. And he's not quite there yet. And I know that like being around Marty St. Louis had to have been massive for him. And that was always going to be the thing that you wrestle with. Do you send him down and get him away from Marty, get him away from Alex Burrows, or do you keep him in the NHL and live with the growing pains, but still have, you know, daily exposure to a coaching staff that has been there and done it and can really, you know, lean on you with some hands-on stuff? They chose to keep him up, and looking at the way things have gone now, it's been the right decision because all that hesitation in his game is gone and he's using his frame. Like he's 6'3", 230 plus pounds. He's actually using his body, you know, to protect pucks, to play a little more physical. His shot is actually really, really good. And we're seeing that kind of come to life. He's like night and day between what he was last year and what he is right now.
Yeah, you said polarizing, and I think that's a good word, because Habs fans are feeling feisty right now about this guy. There's some, I don't want to say victory lap, but there's definitely like an Undertaker sit up vibe happening with Habs fans around this kid. Because look, we are too quick to judge a lot of these guys, absolutely. But he wasn't great last year. I mean, it's very not fair. Like,
yeah,
last year for a first overall pick, even in a so-so top of the draft, the numbers you look at were not there. And the tricky part is, you can look at some other guys who became stars in this league. Leon Draisaitl being probably the biggest of them. Joe Thornton being another guy who had lousy first years.
Mm-hmm.
You can also look at a lot of guys who came in as high picks and had lousy first years because they were just lousy NHLers. So,
well, I also think you compare first overall picks with first overall picks. And in this situation, I don't think that's an apples to apples comparison, because this was the age group that was the most affected by COVID. And they were the ones that lost a lot of games at a crucial development age. So if you open up Slavkovsky's Hockey DB page, he was probably the one that was able to play the most out of all the guys, because the OHL was shut down, and even the Q and the Dub, like, they had limited seasons. He was able to play the most, but it still stunts your development. And I think you have to compare him to the guys he was drafted in his own draft. And who went second overall that year? Was it Nemitz? Like, he was, he was playing in the American Hockey League. He's just finally kind of made the step up to the NHL. Logan Cooley had a really good start to the season. I believe now Slavkovsky is ahead of him in points, and Shane Wright is playing in the AHL. So when you take a look at that, then you compare apples to apples within his own draft, it doesn't look that bad. The problem is, we look at other players that were picked first overall, and it's Connor Bedard, Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews.
Matthews had four goals in his first game.
He had four goals in his first season. And I was not playing in that game. I was down in the bowels of the Canadian Tire Center doing a miserable bike ride. And this guy was putting up four goals. And we couldn't believe it. Like, it was myself. I can't remember who were the healthy scratches that game, but it was us and the strength coach. And we're sitting there like, this can't be real. Like, this guy cannot be doing this in his first NHL game. And in typical Leafs fashion, I believe we found a way to lose that game as well. So all was right in the world in that moment.
I was trying to like very, very quickly see who else was on the bike with you in October.
I want to say, okay. Because I remember Poli, he had just come off the World Cup of Hockey and he's such a great guy, like such an awesome team guy. He had just come off the World Cup of Hockey and he was healthy scratched for the first game of the season. And he had been healthy scratched the first game of the previous season. And once he got in the lineup, he obviously never came out. He ended up getting traded to San Jose, I believe, with James Reimer, comes back. And then I think he was sitting there and he said to me, "I don't like to complain too much, but..." Are you telling me I was good enough to play in the World Cup of Hockey 2 weeks ago, and now I'm not good enough to play on like the top six on this team in the NHL? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And I go, "Holy, I think you got a good point there." And sure enough, the next day he was in the coach's office making that point abundantly clear to our coach.
I think I want to go back to something you said about Slavkovsky too. Like, what would the good be in sending him to the American League? Okay, like, the guy's six, he's 6'3", 200, whatever. Like
is not that, now. Is there,
well, not my now.
Point, no, well, Sean, my point at the beginning of the season was, if you were ever going to do that, last year was the year to do it, where you just say, go play. There's not going to be any pressure on you. No one's going to be talking about you. You just go play down there and don't even worry that this even exists. But they didn't do that. So once you didn't go down that road last year, you don't go down that road this year, because it sends the wrong message. It's like, you just went through the whole year in the NHL. Mind you, he did get hurt last year and he ended up missing some time. And I think that's even another case to be made for, you know, having some patience with him. Like, he missed a significant chunk of time. But with that being said, the time to go to the AHL was the first year. So you go into this year, you keep him up, and it absolutely 100% turned out to be the right decision, because he's playing great. He's really assertive on the power play as well. You know, the last game they played on Saturday night, there's a little clip there where he has the puck in the neutral zone and he like stick handles through a couple guys standing still, eventually makes a good play on the puck. I was like, he would never have done that last year, but it just goes to show you, like, the hesitation, is going away. The confidence in his game is growing. And that's a welcome sight for Habs fans. And I kind of made the comparison during one of the games, like, what if he could turn into Chris Kreider plus? Like, what if he could be Chris Kreider, maybe a little better than that? I think
they should take Chris Kreider, just Chris Kreider.
That would be incredible. Like, the guy scored 52 goals 2 years ago. And if he plays, like, if he ever gets a little bit of that mean streak and nastiness that Kreider has, I think the template is right there, as far as that's a guy that's 6'3", 230 pounds, and a very successful power forward.
I got to say, that's, you take the 50 goals. I don't know if Chris Kreider is the name you want to be dropping in Montreal, though, because they still are not over the Carey Price.
And I was very nervous. That's a great point. I was very nervous. We did an opening hit for the game, and I looked at Brian Mudrick, my play-by-play guy. I said, I'm gonna drop the name Chris Kreider. He goes,
are you sure?
All right, buddy. Just, you know.
Yeah.
I did say it in the hit. I'm like, you know, I know he's been public enemy number one here in Montreal, but it is a little bit of a compliment at times when someone, you know, a fan base hates someone so much, like Brad Marchand in Toronto, or Brad Marchand anywhere. You know, like,
yeah,
people hate him, and they would probably like him on their own team.
So let me just ask this then. I'll go the other way, because Habs fans have had to listen to people call this kid a bust, or a potential bust, or he's on the way to being a bust. And now it's kind of tilting the other way. So let's go crazy. Like, what's the ceiling here? I mean, you mentioned Kreider. Kreider's a great player. I still think if you have a first overall pick, you're probably aiming higher than that. So what can we get to? Can this be like a Mikko Rantanen? Could it be like, is Leon Draisaitl, maybe, you know, he was an MVP. So that feels a little high, but let's pump the tires of the Habs fans who had to spend a year listening to everyone talk about.
Hold on a second. I used to do the All-American show with me and Custance. Like, I'm simply not going to let this Chris Kreider slander stand.
I don't think it's slander. I think it's complimentary.
DGB. Of course it is.
Yeah, it depends how you look at it. See, I'll be completely honest with you. I'm not there yet with Mikko Rantanen. I just think, like,
wow.
I remember Rantanen coming into the league. I would have been around still when he came in, and he, like, right away, he was more polished, Rantanen. And I still see that in his game right now. I think with Rantanen, there's a little more offensive upside. You also have to keep in mind, like, Rantanen has played with Nathan MacKinnon a long time, and they've just, you know, they've had really good teams the last few years. But, like, when I say Kreider plus, I think that's kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, that's a good attainable goal for the player. And maybe there is a little more offensive upside than with Kreider, because Kreider had a big year 2 years ago. I think previous to that, it was, you know, 50 to 60 kind of points. Like, I have no doubt at some point in Slavkovsky's career, he's going to be touching a point per game player. But even if he isn't, let's say he isn't, if he finds a little bit of that nastiness and he brings a different kind of element, I think that's what made him such an enticing prospect, because the way he's built, he's going to be able to do things in the NHL that not everyone is built to do. And that's what, you know, I think that's what Habs fans get really excited about when it comes to the future of his game. Like, no, you know, no disrespect to Shane Wright or Logan Cooley, who were drafted behind him. They're just not built the same way. So they're always going to have, you know, some kind of physical limitation where he's a big, big man child. And if you can find a way to extract something else aside from the good shot or the good skating ability, it's like that's that kind of X factor that a lot of teams really want to get. And it's hard to acquire via free agency or trades. And, you know, if you have a chance to bring that into your organization through the draft and harness that and develop it, that's why I say, like, you know, maybe it's not quite Rantanen, but it could be like, you know, Kreider on his best year. And I think I think that would leave a lot of happiness in the Habs fan base.
Okay, well, I can't leave this with happiness on the Habs fan base. So let me just ask one quite real quick. Give me almost a yes or no answer. Slavkovsky, Caulfield, Suzuki. If that's the first line, can you build a championship team with that as your first line?
I do believe so, because I'll use the example of Vegas last year. Like, does Vegas have a first line that really blew you away? Like, was it the perfection line in Boston? Is it, you know, Matthews, Marner, Hyman, or was it Nugent Hopkins, McDavid, you know what I mean? Like, so if right now the Habs, where they're at, they have a really good first line. They have some players lower in the lineup who provide a good service to them, play with some energy, some physicality. Right now, lines 2 and 3 are in transition. Let's call it that. It's some players, maybe some older guys, maybe some, you know, some older guys with some expiring contracts or a couple years left that you know, at some point need to be moved their way out of the lineup. They haven't quite made the transition there. And that's the black hole in the lineup for them when it comes to their future moving forward. So if you build a second line and a third line that's quite good, but not, you know, superstar power, all of a sudden you turn into a four line team that can have some versatility. It may not have the highest upside, but that seems to be a good recipe for success. And I would cite Vegas, where, you know, every line that Vegas had a centerman who could play on both sides of the puck, had some bigger bodies lower in the lineup that played with some physicality. And it wasn't just one line that had to do all the work. And if that's where the Habs can get, I think they'll be very happy with that. With that being said, it's incredibly difficult to do. Like, very difficult. Every team would love to achieve that. The thing about starting a rebuild is it's not really a timetable. You know, I don't sense that there's a lot of pressure to be good right away. So they do have time on their hands to try and make that happen, but they'll have to make the right moves along the way.
I mean, because it's all about trajectory. It's not necessarily that they need to, they don't need to finish with 88 points this year to feel good about things. Like, enough stuff has happened at the individual level where like Suzuki, there have been flashes in the past where, like, at times he's produced, at times he's been a more complete player. Like, it's always been kind of, he gives one away to make the other work. And now it's like, he's doing everything. Right. And Slavkovsky is, you know, we've talked about him plenty. So, like, you see those strides in individual players, and it's like, I don't know how you look at the season as anything.
That's all it is. That's what this year is. It's looking at the individual players and seeing the growth. And I think a lot of that has to come on the blue line as well. Like, that's where a lot of their, you know, their transition is going to be focused, because they have a lot of really good young blue liners. And the challenge for them is, do you keep the right ones? Because there's not enough room for all of those guys. And, you know, some guys have come in and basically been non-negotiable guys. Like Caden Gooley, from the moment he stepped in the league, has been 20 minutes plus every night and, you know, bounces back every time he seems to make a mistake. Like, he's there for sure. He's not going anywhere. And then between, you know, Struble, Kovacevic, Harris, Jack Eye, then they're going to have like this next young crop with Mayu and Reinbacher and Lane Hudson. Like, who stays, who goes? And, you know, do you trade the wrong guy? And that's for me, that would be the biggest fear when trying to construct their blue line for the future.
So we talked about Slavkovsky being a guy that drafted early, comes in, big hype, supposed to be a franchise player, and then gets off to the slow start. Another guy fits in that description, Quentin Byfield. Had a hell of a goal last night.
Yeah.
Elway, having a great season, but that goal last night, if people haven't seen it, seek it out. Because I will admit, I'm an Eastern sports writer, so of course I go to bed before the Kings or any of the West Coast teams play. I woke up, I had a text from somebody going, just Quentin Byfield, exclamation point. Thought, all right, he must have done something. And then I swear I was catching up on my Twitter feed, and every second tweet was showing different angles of this goal.
It was one of those goals.
Here's my question to you. It didn't take very long this morning to find that goal. And I also got that same text, and it was from our producer, Jeff. And as soon as I saw that text this morning, I said to my head, in my head, I love hockey. I watch a ton of hockey. I do this for a living. There's no way that I was staying up to watch a Los Angeles Kings Columbus Blue Jackets 10:30 p.m. start. There's just no way. But anyways, I ended up catching the highlights this morning. And Quentin Byfield, that's probably like goal of the year candidate. He scored a really nice one early in the year in Montreal as well. But there's another like really good example of a kid that was taken high in the draft, and a team expects that kind of player, like he's a second overall. Like that's the kind of guy that's supposed to change the complexion of the future of your team. It didn't happen right away. I believe in every year he's been in the league, he's had to spend some time in the American Hockey League. And there was another player in Quentin Byfield who kind of had some development stunted by the COVID years. And so now he's finally playing. His team is, you know, better around him, even though they've been struggling recently, but they've played better under Jimmy Hiller, which is encouraging. When you talk about these young guys, they obviously have the skill set, or they wouldn't have been drafted that high. Like they can skate, they can stick handle, they can shoot, all that kind of stuff. The NHL is a very difficult league for a number of reasons. One of those reasons is just the mental grind that you have to go through every single day. And the change in schedule is very different than what you go through in the American Hockey League and junior hockey. Junior hockey, American Hockey League, basically you'll practice all week long and they might sprinkle in a random Wednesday night game. I know they're trying to do more of that now in the AHL because they're trying to get away from the 3 days and 3 days. So they sprinkle in some Wednesdays. But my point being, it's a predictable schedule. So you know when your practice days are going to be, you know when you have to ramp things up for the weekend, then you have a day off coming and you do it all over again. The NHL is not like that. The NHL is games every other day where you have to manage your highs and your lows, and it's very difficult to do so. And you can get caught up in, oh, I'm tired, or I'm not feeling it, or I don't have confidence. And if you don't have confidence and you got four games in 6 days, you're screwed because you're just not going to find it. Whereas you can kind of reset. You can reset in the AHL. You can reset in junior hockey. You don't have that opportunity in the NHL. So it's up to you to find it. And that's a big challenge for young players who make the jump. So Quentin Byfield now obviously has the skill set. That's on full display, especially last night with that goal. But it does take a little bit of time to figure things out in the NHL. And like that's, you know, that's one of the hurdles that he would have to deal with. And that's also a welcome sight for the LA Kings, because that's someone who's supposed to, you know, take this team and take the torch and kind of carry it when Kopitar is gone. And, you know, like that, those are the guys you're going to look to. And good for him for kind of sticking with it, because he's having a big year now.
Yeah. And big especially for Kings fans, like you talked about with Slafkovský, it was like, well, you look at the other guys in the draft here, Kings fans have had to watch Tim Stützle become, you know, step into the league. And within 2 years, he's a 90 point guy. And they're sitting there going, did we pick the wrong guy? Doesn't look that anymore. I got to ask Frank, you do these great breakdowns on TikTok where you take a play or a goal and say, okay, who did the right thing? Who did the wrong thing? And it's really good. I've been saying for years, there's not enough X's and O's in what we do. Do you even bother doing a breakdown of that Quentin Byfield goal? Or are you just like, good luck, boys? That's a guy like that decides it's going in. It's going in, whatever you
do. I think with something like that, you can kind of see what happened there, right? Like when I do those things, I kind of, first of all, I've been incredibly busy, so I haven't been able to do them as much as I would like to. But I want to show someone the strategy behind what's going on the ice. Like, what is a player thinking in a given moment and kind of show how quickly things can happen. And I think for a goal like that, it's literally just, dude, that guy is really skilled and that's a great individual effort and you can see it. But when there's multiple breakdowns and you say, how did that guy get so wide open? I think that's a great opportunity to kind of say, okay, let's see what happened here. Maybe someone was highly intelligent on the offensive side of the puck. Maybe someone missed their assignment on the defensive side of the puck. Like, let's see what this team is trying to do. And I think with something like Byfield, it's just like, you do your thing, man. Like that was very, very impressive.
Zach Werenski is so happy to hear that there's no breakdown coming of that. Yeah, he does not need to see any slow-mo of that play because it didn't go great for him.
I think it might have been Adam Boakvist too. I like see that's how good the Byfield goal was. Is you're like, who did he cook? Was it Werenski? Like whatever. This is the benefits of playing the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? That's no like their must see TV.
They get 30 p.m. They can just posterize. No one sees it. Yeah, we're Eastern media. We don't see it.
This is like you are truly one of us now. You're falling asleep during West Coast games and trying to pretend like you watch it.
I do like because we do a lot of Sports Center stuff at mm-hmm. night, like you just have to stay up anyways because you got to do the hits at around 1 a.m. to, you know, have them ready for the morning show. Mm-hmm. But like Vancouver's been a team like I stay up and watch a lot. They've been really exciting. And like their game last night against Colorado, I thought they handled themselves much better, obviously, than mm-hmm. they did against Minnesota. But even the previous game against Winnipeg, like mm-hmm. where I thought against Winnipeg, that was very telling as to when a team really asserts themselves physically over you, how do you handle that? Do you retaliate? Do you get lost in the game? Like there's a game within the game that happens when something, you know, when it's that physical. And I thought their number one priority in the game against Winnipeg was we have to answer the bell here. We have to show that we're more physical than them. And in doing that, they made some critical mistakes that led to, you know, high danger chances for Winnipeg. And mm-hmm. and going into Minnesota, like I still felt like that was still kind of within their game. And last night they did a better job of kind of managing things against a Colorado team that, you know, when they get two goals from Johansson, different team. You know, like yeah, that's
absolutely
that's been one of the biggest things for Colorado is what a lot of people assume the Leafs are, and they're probably not wrong at times, is like a one-line team.
Oh, true.
If you watch Colorado, that's been the story for them all year long.
Mm-hmm. Wait, because Johansson had that, he was, you know, at least producing at the start of the year and then went in the tank for a while. But like you get goals from someone like him, things change in a hurry.
It's different, that's right? So it's different because everyone's going to be all over McKinnon, and especially with a good team like Vancouver, like they're going to have the horses to kind of go up and down the ice with him. But, you know, can you get something from your second line? Look at all the best teams that we've seen over the years have had a 1-2 punch down the middle mm-hmm. that can give you something. And like, if you don't have that, you kind of get what Toronto has been in the playoffs a lot, where it's like 5-on-5. Can you find something? You know, and even, you know, looking at Toronto now, when was the last time Tavares scored a goal at 5-on-5? Was it, you know, December, you know, halfway through December? So like that's, you know, that's always going to be hockey will change a lot over the years. It's changed a lot from when I was in the league to now, but.
Yes. Those many years ago that you were in the league.
It's changed a lot, man.
That's crazy, dude.
Okay, so I don't know how much time we have left, but
I was just cook. Let's go. That's fine.
I was at the Leaf Colorado game on a Saturday night. It would have been in January, I think. And I was sitting next. We were in the alumni box, myself, my wife, and we were sitting next to Chris Versteeg and his son. And Chris and I were talking throughout the game, and we go, "Man, I think I would have got hit in that moment." And he looks at me. He goes, "No, no, no." He goes, "You would have been hit. Then that player would have been." And then we started going through like every shift and we're like, okay, so when we were in the league, that would have been still staying on the boards. That guy would have got finished there. And then he's like, "Buddy, I used to get boxed out from the corner and I wouldn't be able to get like to the circle." And he's like, "I would have guys like Matt Green who were 6'4", 220 pounds, cross-checking me, mauling me, and it was all good. And he goes, now you can't do that. Like, you can't cross-check guys like that. You can't start your box outs. And he goes, the whole game, like the whole game, and we came to an agreement on this, the whole game was played on the wall. And that's like, I don't know, was that 5-6 years ago? And yeah. Now it's way more free flowing through the middle. Guys are making plays, and it's like, it is, you know, in 5 years, or 5 or 6 years, it's crazy how much the game has changed. And, you know, it kind of goes to what Torts has been talking about when Torts said, it's a dumb league.
It's a dumb league. It's changed for coaches too. And we've had to make adjustments because there are so many mistakes made. I guess the thing with the young athletes is sometimes you have to wait your turn, right? As far as gaining respect and not wanting everything right now, not expecting everything right now, as far as ice time, as far as your contract, whatever it may be. I think that's where I think the athletes have changed. They have entourages around them that I think direct them the wrong way. And the hierarchy of a room, the hierarchy of what it is to be a pro, the process you have to go through as a pro, I think's lost a little bit with the athlete now. And that's something I miss terribly in being in the league for so long, seeing where it's gone to now. Great athletes, great skill, great speed, but the mental and the understanding what it is to be a pro and respecting the National Hockey League, that's where I have some struggles.
Were you applauding when he was saying that? Were you like, hell yeah?
I wasn't applauding it. I would just say it's different. It's different because, you know, guys were kind of, they had more of a defensive kind of awareness, like the gamesmanship, I think, has been lost a little bit along the way. And I think, you know, coaches have had to adjust to the modern player where these guys came up with, you know, putting the puck through sticks and pylons and all that great stuff, but like managing the score, managing the time, like those kinds of things. You watch games now and you're like, it's a 2-1 game with 3 minutes left and you decided to go up the middle. Are you crazy? Like, you know, those kinds of things happen. I think for a guy like Torts, who's been around the game a long time, it must drive him nuts.
Okay. So, speaking of the old school coaches. All right. So you can't go up the middle. You can't go off the boards. You know where else you can't go? Las Vegas, apparently, to see a concert, because that was big news this week, was the Nashville Predators with their big field trip to the Sphere to go see U2 gets shut down after a couple of bad games, a couple of bad practices, apparently.
They got spanked by Dallas last week.
Yeah. They had 9-2 loss. And Andrew Burnett and Barry Trotz come in and say, you know what? Trip to Vegas canceled. The early trip to Vegas, the concert canceled, everything. And there was a debate on Hockey Night in Canada about that, where, you know, Kelly Rudy was kind of saying, you can't do that. You can't take something away that's already been planned. And Kevin Bieksa was like, no, go ahead. It's on the road. Go ahead and yank it away. Give me the player's perspective on that. How ticked off would you be if you had something like that planned, presumably a little while in advance, and then the coach comes in one day and says, you know what, forget it, you're not doing it?
Yeah, there would have been a lot of pissed off guys about that. I'll just tell you briefly about how the schedule works, like in an NHL season. So obviously you get your game schedule, but we get like an internal schedule, basically month by month, with here are our practice times, here's our playing times, here's when we're going to travel, all that kind of stuff. Because of the CBA, there's days off on there, right? Those days off are like, that's the gospel. Mm-hmm. Like that, because, you know, guys have wives, girlfriends, kids, you know, with the way the season works, you're always at the rink. You're always traveling. So those days off, those like are sacred. Mm-hmm. And I know in the past, when things have had to get shuffled around with the days off, guys do not like that because it creates an issue for them where it's like, I had a birthday party planned for my kid and now I got to rearrange it. Not like, you know what I mean? Like there's a human element to those types of things. This is not that. This is different. This is an extra trip to Vegas. The team obviously hadn't been playing well. And it's funny to hear like hadn't practiced well, like every team now, or pretty much every team, if they're not doing it, they're behind the times. they all videotape practice and watch it. So there's no hiding in practice anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's not like for, not for punishment reasons. Like, I think they want to see, like, I don't know, how did the power play look in practice today? Like, you know, so you got to look at it that way. But you know, let's call a spade. They want to see your effort and how you're practicing. And because practices are, I don't know, they're just as important nowadays. Anyways, something like that would piss a lot of the players off, but they've won a couple games since then. So obviously mm-hmm. the message was sent and it was the right message. And it kind of just goes back to something you learn early on when you're a player. You're not entitled to anything in the NHL. Like, you're really not. You're not entitled to ice time. You're not entitled to being there. Like, you're constantly having to show your worth. And, you know, a trip like that in the middle of the season is supposed to be looked at as a reward, you know, for your effort and what you've achieved so far. And if it's not going well and there's an effort issue, it's hard to argue. Like, it's hard to have a problem with that. It's hard to be outraged with that. You're simply not entitled to whatever you want in the NHL. So, you know, the results have been there since then. So it's hard to argue what they did.
Did you ever have any Vegas off days?
No, you know what? You want to hear something really sad?
Yeah. Yeah, of course I do.
The first year Vegas was in the league.
That's what we're all about here.
Yeah.
And I had been called up and we were about to go on the Vegas trip. I was all ready to go and I got sent down. Apparently I got told that there was 4 days left until my waiver clock was going to have to renew. And if I was with the team for the duration of the road trip, I basically would have just flown there and then had to fly back. Because, you know, they didn't want me to have to clear waivers again. So if they send you down, you know, your waiver clock kind of renews. So anyways,
how about you just send me back in the middle of the trip? Like, it'll be, let's find a way to make this work.
What are these paper transactions I keep hearing about?
Yeah.
couldn't they just send you send you to like air quotes to like Wheeling like for a day or two?
Let's fire up the old paper transaction for a day.
Were you there with the Leafs when, wasn't there something with, why do I feel like there was something with like a helicopter and a golf trip and there were some guys who were going to go play golf and that got shut down?
I wasn't there for that, but I do know that the first year that Vegas was in the league, I was talking to some of the guys on the team, like, hey, where'd you guys end up staying? Because everyone just had a sneaky suspicion that with Lou running the show, the boys weren't going to stay on the strip. And sure enough,
what gave them that idea? Like,
where'd you guys stay? Nowhere near the strip, for your information.
They're over by the practice rink in like Henderson or whatever. Yeah.
Lou does not strike as a Vegas guy.
Well, in Tahoe.
Yeah. He's got some friends in Vegas, though, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Frank, this has been great, man.
We'll do it again.
I think so. I think we're going to do it again in 2 weeks, in fact. Yeah. How many games are you working from now until then? Do you know?
I don't know. You know what? Okay. It's kind of a blur right now. But Thursday I'll be in Pittsburgh. Saturday I'll be in Newark to do the Jersey game. Next Tuesday I'll be in Montreal doing the Habs versus Coyotes. And yeah, and then I got some radio sprinkled in. So it's all good. Busy times, but busy is good.
Safe travels, man. We'll catch up in a couple weeks.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
That was a good first round with Frankie. I think he's going to come back. Good right? Start.
Yeah.
I think we should maybe make this a recurring segment, too. Do we have a fake record?
That whole thing, the whole production, it was all an act.
Not bad, huh?
What about the breathing, the panting, the moaning, the screaming?
Fake.
We have a fake stat to talk about here. What is, like, we've both heard about the Nathan MacKinnon home.
It's
home
everywhere all of a sudden. Nathan MacKinnon home point scoring streak to start the season. Now, it's an impressive accomplishment. I'm not taking anything away from that. Should I care about this? Is this real? Had you ever heard of this record before?
It's one of those, it happens like, I feel like we see this periodically where people talk about this record like it's something we should know. Like, and of course, Wayne Gretzky holds the record for point streak to start a season at home.
On home ice. I'm that's like, too many modifiers, man. That's,
sure.
I feel like you get one.
That's it. There's one, 100%. There's one too many. One too many qualifiers there for it. And of course, I'm sure like Avs fans are gonna be livid now. But whatever.
I'm a Leafs fan. Not a lot of people know.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's Austin Matthews. A couple years ago, had a streak of, and I don't know if he broke the record or got close, but it was consecutive goals scored on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly enough, given it's the Leafs, it got like big play up here after a while. It was like another rogue is, you know, boy, is he gonna continue the streak? And I'm just sitting there going, this it's cool. I like that he's playing well. I've never heard of this before. And I'm a numbers guy. I'm a history. I love this stuff. If I've never heard of a record until someone's two games away from it, then what are we doing? Like, you know, Mitch Marner had his like beginning of the season point streak going. Nylander had it this year. Like it was, and now it's the home point streak. And I saw somebody the other day tweet out unironically because he's Wayne Gretzky holds the record. Bobby Orr had been number two. And Nathan MacKinnon just passed Bobby Orr. And somebody said, when you're breaking records that are held by Bob, when you're doing things that only Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky are done, you're the MVP of the league. And I was like, what are we doing? Like there's gotta be at some point, just say it's, you know, it's a nice accomplishment, but why am I hearing about this every game? And like, you know, I'm getting updates on Twitter, like the streak continues. And I'm like, sure it does. Okay.
I think that's a big part. I think a big part of it is that we're at that point of the season now, especially with, you know, McDavid making a charge and Kucherov's been there from the start and Matthews is on pace to score 110 goals or whatever it is at this point.
Sounds right.
We're in like the heart stumping. This is like stump for your candidate season, right? Like sure. this is people are just like grabbing on to whatever. To whatever limb that they can reach to find some weird leg up. And look, all that is to me is an indicator that he's playing well. I don't inherently care because it means he's scoring in a lot of games. That's the takeaway. Like he's scoring frequently a lot. It doesn't matter that it was to start the season or at home. It's not a record that anybody cares about. I actually just looked up the main records page on the NHL's website. It's not even, there's a zillion listed here. It's not even listed in single season scoring streaks. There's goal streaks for a rookie and from the start of the season and goal streak, whatever, point streaks for defensemen, all that stuff. Like it didn't make that cut. So I will not be forced into caring about this. I apologize.
Now, if he runs the table and does the whole season, which I think is what Gretzky did, that will be impressive. I will check in if he gets to the end of the year and he's okay. He scored in every home game. Maybe I'll get on that. But I don't know if I need the breathless updates, or maybe I do. Maybe it's February and I should be happy that there's anything on. But
he's gonna the streak is gonna snap in the third week in March or something. And guess what, Nathan MacKinnon, my friend, you have lost my heart trophy vote. I'm sorry.
That's right.
It's going to someone else. If you want to have a chance, you better keep this up until the bloody end.
That's right. So I got to say, this is interesting. Is the record is held by Wayne Gretzky,
mm-hmm.
and he did it an entire season. But the entire season he did it was an 80 game season.
But so they played 41 games at home.
So in other words, he had 40 games at home. Does that mean is the record breakable or has
yes?
What happens if MacKinnon misses a game? The other thing. Like
doesn't count,
does it? It's not a real thing.
Wait a second. That immediately got me like more interested in this by a factor of 10. Is that I just figured Gretzky was at 41. He's at 40.
Gretzky's at 40 according to the NHL. So that's
So he can break it.
In theory, it's a breakable record, but again, I don't know if MacKinnon missed a game somewhere along the lines.
I take back everything I said.
This is the biggest story This is going to be the recurring feature, the Nathan MacKinnon record watch.
We're doing that. As soon as it's possible, as soon as it's possible for someone to break a Gretzky record, I'm like, all right, let's go. We need to.
That's pretty good.
We need to.
Sorry, Ovechkin, you're off the Gretzky record watch. It is now Nathan MacKinnon.
I think we just got our main topic for next week. It's just a deep dive into the importance
every week
of Nathan MacKinnon's point streak.
Because you know it's going to be like, I remember with Nylander, there was like one game where it was like he got the second assist on a empty net goal with 30 seconds left. People are like, the streak lives, and you're like, yeah, but doesn't.
Maybe this should just end. Let the old days pass away. This was good, right? I feel like we're two for two here, right?
Yeah,
we can say that.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic, and Frank was great.
He was.
It's so fun to listen to somebody who knows
so much better. He's so much better than us.
Yeah, he will eventually just take over the.
That's fine.
You and I are Caulfield and Suzuki, and he's Slifkovsky. His ceiling is so much higher. It might take him a little while to get there, but he's going to be the face of the franchise very, very soon.
I'll tell you what. People have been arguing about my potential to be a first line center for years, and I think everyone's just accepted that I'm just. Lower end. Can you like win some games with me? Yeah. Can you win anything important? No. I need support.
Can you make the playoffs with you as the first line center? Maybe. Can you win a cup? Probably not.
You're getting bounced in five in the first round.
Right. And I'm just a little short guy who doesn't contribute much other than the occasional highlight reel.
It's not whatever. It's not true. No. All right, buddy. Thanks for doing this. I gotta stop thanking you for doing this. Who cares? Yeah. We have to do this. It's like not our. We don't have a choice here.
Yeah, I wasn't. Wasn't given an option, but whatever. You're welcome.
I'll tell you who I can thank. Our listeners, we love you. Thank you for listening to the Athletic Hockey Show. Leave a 5-star thing if that's your thing, and review it if you're enjoying us specifically. Don't mention anybody else. Just talk about me and McIndoe. Also, right now, you can get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic for $2 a month if you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Thursday is back with Haley and Max and me. Sorry for that as well. Sean, I'll talk to you next week, bud.
Right on.